Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast with Jeff and Gretchen, show number 74.
Ooh.
It's been a while since number 73, hasn't it?
It has. We were just talking.
There's been a lot of stuff going on in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons for the delay in the show, I should just come out and say it. If you're not on Facebook, we have a This and That Podcast page on Facebook. But there's been a lot of updates to that. I had a fire here. Fire sale. Had a fire here in the house, and it really affected the only room that it really affected was the studio, although I had to move everything out of the studio while it was being repaired. Mostly it was because of the heat generated by this podcast and the music. I was putting down some really hot licks on the guitar, and I can't help it. It just exploded. No, actually what happened, I live in an old house, 1918, and I think the wiring was 1918. Actually, in these old houses, wiring is there's just everything and anything. In fact, the electrician, I had to get the whole house rewired, but the electrician left a bunch of stuff up there, disconnected wires, just because it was too much of a hassle to bring everything down, disconnected everything, but he said, if this house could tell stories, there's just so much, dumb stuff done over the years for different reasons. I mean, he found stuff is like, I don't know why this is here. I have no idea why this would be here. But I had a small smoldering piece of wood up in the attic, and I smelled it and called the electrician first because half my electricity, the house went out. And he went up to the attic and looked around, didn't see anything. But finally was exploring it a little bit more, pulled up some insulation, and all of a sudden he saw the flame. There wasn't a flame really, it was kind of smoldering, but when it was fed oxygen.
So he fanned the fire for you.
He fanned the fire for me, and immediately what he did two things. He put the insulation back down, which is smart.
Uh-huh.
And he said, he yelled down at me, call the fire department. So that was like midnight. In fact, that ice day that we had was kind of horrible.
Oh, you were on the ice day.
Yeah.
Wow.
So so then the firemen came, and they
caused way more damage.
Four huge guys, just came up, and they were they were very good. I'll have to say they were very good. But
how long did it take them to get here?
They were so professional. Well, I've got the fire station, three blocks down the street.
Okay.
So they were here in less than 5 minutes. And they basically said, where's the fire? Where's the fire? And my electrician, who told me he'd point the fire out to them where it is, was in the truck doing something, like having a cigarette or something. It's like I had to yell, run out to him. Go, come on, get back up there and tell him where the fire is. I think he was freaked out or something. But the firemen were kind of yelling at me, like, where is the fire? And they went up there, and anyway, we found it. And then it said, okay, well, I don't think this is a big deal. I think we just need a little bit of water. And I actually started hauling buckets of water up there for them.
Uh-huh.
And that wasn't enough. And they took out the pickaxes and started busting some holes up there. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well.
But they did a good job. He came down in that corner I was showing you in the studio, and he immediately saw my motif, my Yamaha electric piano.
Uh-huh.
And he said, there's a keyboard down there. Get the tarps. So, and this is very funny and kind of cute. They went out to the fire truck. They got these big old tarps, and they started tarping up my grand piano in the living
room.
Oh, wow,
okay.
Because the guy just said, piano, put a tarp on it.
So he's tarping the wrong thing.
He's tarping the wrong thing. And I told him right away, I said, he's talking about the electric piano in there. But, it's okay. May as well protect this thing.
Right.
Because who knows what the extent of this is going to be.
Right.
So, keep doing that. But it's really the electronic one. So they also tarped that. And they tarped a bunch of the electronic stuff in here that was in that, especially in that corner.
Uh-huh.
And they... it was just very conscientious of them. And anyway, they ended up they put it out. I had a big old hole in there and no heat, no electricity. And, then I got an electrician. I got it rewired within 3 or 4 days it took. And then so the rewiring was all on me, all,
mm-hmm.
But you saw this room. We got the floors done. Mm-hmm. It's all repainted. Everything looks nice.
Mm-hmm. Looks very nice.
And that's all. That was all insurance with a $1,000 deductible. So that wasn't a half bad deal.
Right.
But boy, it just took forever. I mean, it's really, this is probably 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, and it's only this week that it's really starting to kind of feel like normal around here.
Wow.
So that was kind of a
fire
kind of,
in the studio.
kind of a big thing, and you know, for those complaining about no show, that's what's going on. I mean, Gretchen and I, we could have done it. I could have used my portable equipment and done some portable shows along the way, but you know, I don't know. Could have done that, and I've reconstructed the studio. It's a lot more efficient layout now. I'm still feeling just a little bit of echo here. I don't quite think I have the right configuration yet of the studio booth and all the echo control yet, but that's a matter of time.
And those fumes from the redone wood floors are definitely
how are you feeling?
Contributing to the vibe tonight.
Woohoo! I just hang out here and get high,
yeah,
man.
Wow. They are a little intense the longer you sit here in this little enclosed space.
So, I know. So this was my tragedy, and my wonderful co-host also had a little bit of a tragedy, didn't you?
Oh, my tragedy. Oh, yeah, everybody.
Okay, let me just finish my tragedy real fast. One thing, because there are, I think in both of these cases, we have lessons to be learned.
Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
Right,
so what's your lesson?
I know for you. Well, for me, it's I've been in this house for 10 years, and I've had, you know, obviously HVAC guys, electrician guys, plumber guys, and a lot of times, they come in and they kind of, you know, put down stuff in the house. But sometimes they say, hey, this is a safety problem.
Right.
And I've been flagged of that kind of thing. You know, this wiring, you know, looks pretty old, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So my advice is listen to them and have things checked out. Because if I wasn't home,
yeah,
or if there wasn't insulation on this piece of wood, things would have been so much worse, up to losing the house.
Wow.
And everything in it.
Wow.
The other thing was that I the best that the electrician could come up with for reasons was A, old wiring, but also this old technique and came knobbing something, which is a really bad technique. I can't remember the name of it now. But also the fact that some of the insulation around the cords themselves were being gnawed by critters.
Oh, wow.
And I've heard critters, you know, I take control of it and then I hear about it. And
right.
Lately I've been kind of blowing it off.
Wow.
Don't blow it off if you've got critters up in your attic. Just don't do it because they're doing damage to, it could be anything, you know?
So they were eating the wires and they maybe exposed something? And
maybe so.
Wow.
Maybe so. I mean, it's a best guess, but combination of poor wiring and this knob and whatever
and our
technique.
Incredibly hot podcast.
And the incredible hot podcast.
That's what did it.
Yes. So now to your tragedy and lessons learned.
My tragedy. Oh, well, maybe everybody knows somebody who's had their identity stolen. But well, when it happens to you, you go, "Geez, what was I thinking?" So it actually did happen to me, and I will never know why it happened, how it happened, but the crooks got my social security number and my date of birth, and somehow they got my American Express card, and then they very, very smartly went to freecreditreport.com and bought all three of my credit reports and sent them to daddydaycare112@gmail.com, and then they proceeded to go on a wild shopping spree in the Bronx. And
what's the daddy daycare thing?
That was their email address they sent my credit reports to. And then they went on a shopping spree in the Bronx, and I still don't know all the extent of the damage, and it will take me probably months before I actually know the complete extent of the damage. And you learn a lot of lessons. So my lesson to everybody is, once you start talking to people and you hear that everybody probably knows somebody in person, it's not just something that you hear these you know, internet stories and stuff, but it is the fastest growing crime in the United States. And what is really sad about it is there's not a ton of prosecution. Even if I have an address of actually where they took goods to, not much will happen. If they go and try to get a driver's license in my name, or if they try to, if they sell my information to get a social security card, it there's really not much that will happen other than me having to undo the damage. So I guess the lesson learned here is protect yourself somehow, and speed is of the essence. So I spend like $5,000 a year on all kinds of insurance, between my car insurance, my home insurance, my life insurance, my disability insurance, but I didn't quite have any insurance on my identity. And that's the thing, that once it happens, you can't undo it, and it will go on forever. So I am not pushing any one particular service, but I would really look at some ID theft protection service that monitors your credit report, because had I caught this the next day when they got these credit reports, I could have put a kibosh at least on the spending, which has taken me a long time to unravel. I couldn't have maybe prevented how they got my Social Security number and date of birth, but it still would have been helpful to at least stop the purchasing.
Right. And, when Gretchen told me about this, I think it was like a week ago, I actually, the very same day, I went out and did some research, because it scared the bejesus out of me. And I went ahead and signed up for LifeLock. And what they've done is, I mean, there's only, you know, as you said, there's, you can't stop the
you can't
the
really
theft,
stop the theft,
especially of the date of birth and Social Security number information. And I'm guessing your job sounds so professional that I'm guessing professionals paid some lackey in a medical office or
that's
a financial institution
thinking.
Or something.
Yeah,
you know, the $500 for this information, and then the professionals really knew what they were doing. They mm-hmm. processed it fast, and you know, did the most damage.
Right. And it'll continue to be sold in the black market again and again. So this just doesn't exactly go away. You know, I've got all kinds of alerts on, but you know what? There is no alert for your Social Security number. Once it's been stolen, it's stolen, and you really can't get a new one. So I'm going to live with this forever and ever. It's like herpes, actually.
Yeah.
It is like herpes, that, you know, there's just no cure.
So what this LifeLock has done, they do a number of things. Well, the most obvious things, and this is really interesting to me, is the government a few years ago did pass a law that said you can, as a consumer, you can call the credit bureaus and request what they call a theft protection or theft lock. It's free. It's a free service, and they have to do it. And this, what it does, it says that if anybody requests a credit card on your name, they will call you personally before they ever issue anything.
Right.
Now, what's interesting about this, twofold, is that So this company, LifeLock, $100 a month, will do it for me automatically.
No, a year.
Huh?
$100 a year.
I'm sorry, $100 a year. Thank you.
Yeah, $100
a year.
That's what's so amazing. It's $100 a year to at least get this service.
Right. Now, you can do it for free. That's the criticism of it. But the government says you have to do this every freaking 90 days.
Yeah.
So they never intended it to be the average citizen. But, and the credit bureaus and the credit card companies have sued these companies because they don't like it at all.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing LifeLock and its competitors do is they put you on some list that says you cannot have unsolicited credit cards. So you can't have a credit card come into your into your house, which is apparently a big, and also kind of a big...
Right. Because those inquiries show up on your credit report. They don't count against your score, but you wouldn't believe I had 3 pages of inquiries from credit card companies that then it turns out those are the ones that you end up getting in the mail with you've been pre-approved.
Right.
And until you look at your credit report, honestly, you don't even remember what's going on. I mean, you know, it's a trip down memory lane, let me tell you.
So the credit card companies are suing these companies because they're saying, first of all, if anybody applies for a credit card, that takes one of their customer service representatives to call, physically make a call. They don't like that at all because it costs them money.
Right.
And they also don't like the fact that it limits their ability to market, to have these unsolicited credit cards. And this is what's the most thing that kind of pissed me off. It doesn't allow them to sell your name very easily.
That's right.
Because the value of their list, because you're protected, becomes a lot less on the free market.
Right.
So my response is, it's exactly what I want. And that's exactly what we all want.
Right.
I think LifeLock and LifeLock alone has 1 million subscribers, and these others, who knows how many others.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clearly something that we want. Why on earth is this not law? And this is only going to get worse, folks.
No, it is. It is, because it's just, even in the news that's out right now, just a week ago, millions of credit card accounts were compromised by Heartland Payment, and that's for Visa and MasterCard numbers. And my cousin happened to be one of those people. Her MasterCard number was sold. It was stolen from Heartland. And the thieves charged $30,000 in one afternoon in Atlanta on her number.
Wow, really?
That's how fast they are. So everybody just, you know, who knows what they bought, but it was a stolen card, $30,000, and that costs all of us. I mean, every one of us pays for that because they won't prosecute. Even if they end up finding these people, the prosecution is so difficult and so time-consuming. I mean, it's a $50 billion a year problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know on mine, you know, Macy's lost $2,000 in an afternoon. I will dispute it. At the most, I'll have to pay $50, but Macy's lost, you know, $1,900 there. And, you know, no wonder every business is in trouble right now.
Right.
No wonder. It's just, it's awful. So.
And all the credit card companies want to do is make you spend more money,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I've heard a lot of top economists talk about this thing. Some people say the financial crisis that we're having is due to banks and things like that. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to us mm-hmm. and how we're living. And we've talked about this on this show for the last 2 years, Gretchen, how personal debt is climbing up and climbing up mm-hmm. and climbing up. And did you see the latest statistics? We're at a ratio of personal debt to national debt that equals the highest point ever in America. And the last time that occurred apparently was right before the Great Depression. Which is kind of interesting.
And the actual debt right now is $33,000 per person if we wanted to try pay off the national debt.
Yeah.
Can you imagine $33,000 per person? That's in every man, woman, and child in this country to pay off the debt.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
So the credit card companies, I mean, I think it's a good business. I don't want to, you know, be somebody as anti-credit card or anything, but there needs to be some controls on these guys because... You know, it's partially them wanting to sell their list, right. Wanting to give us unsolicited.
Or instant credit. That's the problem here. Instant credit. How urgent right. is it that you absolutely have to have an instant credit Macy's card to go spend it that afternoon without even the physical card? Which
right.
is exactly what happened. The card is now in my possession, but it's already maxed out.
Right.
Because they mailed it to me, but they had already spent using an instant credit that they were given on one day. From Macy's. Why on earth are they allowing that? You know, when it continues to happen again and again.
Right.
So, hey, you learn a lot, but, you know, this is one topic.
How many hours have you spent so far on this problem?
I have spent probably just in 1 week 32 hours.
And who has an extra 32 hours per week?
Yeah, and I hate to say it, but I'm also internet savvy and I'm pretty smart and I understand exactly what I have to do after reading a lot about it. But can you imagine people who maybe English is not their main language? It's just a maze of places you have to go. You get conflicting information about to file a police report in Dallas. The Dallas police are saying that I have to prove that the fraud was committed in Dallas. Well, then you go to the Texas Attorney General's office and they say no. That is absolutely not true. That I can, as long as I can prove there was fraud, they have to file the police report. And without that police report, I need that to pursue lots of different other things. So you have to file a police report. But you can't file the police report without the fraud affidavits. So it's one thing,
well,
you know, it goes in a certain order. And
here's
that.
Another perspective. I was at a dinner last night and we were talking about this topic. And as you said,
everybody knows somebody,
right?
Right, right.
Bring it up and somebody will say something. So, but what their line is that this person's got from the police was, this wasn't a crime against you, this is a crime against the merchant. And the merchant has to step up and claim it as a criminal issue.
Well, that's the fraud affidavit.
Yeah.
Because if they're out money, sure, they're the ones that ultimately
right.
have to pay because
right.
of the law saying I'm only liable for
right.
$50. But I beg to differ. It feels like a definite crime against me. It feels like somebody walked into my house and stole literal property out from under me because this was my credit.
Probably more important, probably more valuable in a lot of ways than
right.
your material stuff
yeah,
in your house.
Yeah, it's more valuable. I mean, how hard do we all work to get a good credit score?
And you don't know when this is going to end.
Right, I don't know. And if they do sell my name to an illegal immigrant, then they use that number, and then I have to pay taxes if they don't file taxes. Or if they go get a driver's license with their picture on it and all my information, that too is, you know, criminal. So
right.
do I have to wait until that happens before I file the police report? I mean, that seems a little ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. Of course it does.
So it's just a long, complicated topic that I wish I didn't know so much about now, but I do. So I just recommend monitor your credit report daily because this is just, that's the key to catching it quickly and putting a kibosh
and
on.
And how does one monitor their credit report daily?
Hiring one of those services.
Okay,
One of those services that you pay a relatively small amount of money to. I just am kicking myself for not having it.
And I can't help, but in this economy, things are going to get worse.
Oh, again, they're totally going to get worse.
I think of the professionals that are doing this, that are paying probably $100 to $200, if that.
Right.
For these low-level workers at institutions that have some of these things.
Think now, about your medical
records.
I think
institutions try to protect, like, for example, a company. Most companies don't key on SSN. SSN is in one place, but very, very few people. I've talked to some HR people here, and very, very few people have access to the SSN. It's all driven by employee ID number.
Right.
And I imagine you'd hope that medical institutions, financial institutions, governmental agencies.
Every time you've been in your doctor's office, can't you see the files lined up in a filing cabinet?
Yeah, sure can. It's very easy,
right? You can see them, right? You can physically see them. Well, who's to say that some dishonest person, some cleaning person, some who knows, walked up and all they had to do was open a file and there's your information.
Right.
You know, so I think medical records are actually pretty vulnerable. You're pretty vulnerable with medical records, and who knows? And actually, your mail stolen out of your mailbox. There's another sign right there.
You know, it's interesting because Obama has been talking about making the electronic medical records, and I always thought, yeah, that'd be nice, and it seems like a cost savings there. I never thought of a big issue, but maybe the bigger issue there is better security protection, is that they could hook that up with heightened security.
Right.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Go back, don't come this way. You got bad credit and you just won't pay. You went out of town to do some shopping. You stopped in a credit clothing store. You just about had to keep swinging your way till they found out something they didn't know. And now they call the credit bureau on your telephone. The salesman shook his head. He turned around and looked you dead in your eyes. And these are the words he said.
Is there anything else going on in our world?
No, I can't think of anything else.
I think we've both been
pretty insular. We're trying to fix up our own problems. I know. I mean, how many hours, you on your problem and me on my problem? So there's some, but believe it or not, there's other things going on in the world, and most of it great and cheery.
Do you believe that?
Most of it cheery.
Oh my God. Could this just be a worse time right now? I think we just need to devote a podcast to happy news.
That would be kind of fun.
Long and hard to find happy news.
Oh. Yeah, it would take a while to get.
Yeah.
Well, what else has been going on? I mean, the economy continues to be bad, but I did see a report yesterday that said January consumer spending was up. For the first time in 6 months or so, and they don't really know why. It's kind of, and at this dinner I went to a corporate dinner for a financial institution, believe it or not, and they had some clients there that were in the car business, car dealerships. And I talked to a couple of gentlemen who were, senior people there, and they said their business is great, and they're selling American cars.
Well, think about it. If you're actually in the market for a car and you have a relatively secure job, isn't this the time to buy a car?
Yeah.
It's absolutely the time to buy a house. That's for sure.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, if you can buy a house right now, what
Except
a bargain.
Except who's lending? Who's lending?
That's true. You have to have a sterling credit.
Yeah.
And no identity theft.
Yeah, right. So there are some good little points amidst all the horrible things.
Well, that is amazing. You hardly hear about that, though.
I mean, it's
dominated by what's going on with the stock market. And
right.
This morning I actually heard people talking about the R word.
Recession?
Recession.
We had that already.
Sorry. D word, depression.
Oh, depression.
Sorry. Yes, I forgot. I got my D's and my R's mixed up. The depression.
Well, whatever they want to call it. We're hurting. I mean, stock market, all of our retirement funds are, half of what they are, and there's no immediate recovery in sight. I'm fascinated on a couple points. On one point, I'm fascinated by the fact that we have brilliant minds in this country and globally, brilliant minds, and there's no consensus of what to do. Have these like PhD economists. Thank you. I can say that word. I'm clearly not a PhD in economics. And, there's no consensus of what to do. In fact, every smart economist says, this is probably worth a try, but we don't know it's going to work.
Right.
So that's on one hand, it's frustrating that we don't have, no one has an answer.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's fascinating in a way that nobody has an answer. We're in uncharted territory.
True.
And it's really intriguing. And clearly, you know, we'll be looking back at this time as do we do the right things or not. I mean, and it's almost like, you know, you've got the Rush Limbaughs and these Limbaughs, or whatever his name is, you know, and they're so anti-spending any kind of money. And the fact that they believe that the Democrats are using this to become, they always say France. First of all, I don't think that's such a horrible thing, but
I know, really.
But I mean, you know, I guess France scares people, you know, I guess they don't like the cheese or eating the innards of animals or something, but I like Paris. I'm sorry. But they're saying that they're using it as an excuse to be a socialist country. And, you know, but they're not offering any other solutions. And then you've got the Democrats on the other side that said, oh, we need to spend. And the fact is, no matter what really your politics are, you're a thinking person, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know what the right answer. I heard Ron Paul say very eloquently, as he always does, he said, we just need to do nothing. We need to let these guys fail.
I heard that.
And it'll be ridden out fast, and in a year we can start recovering. At first I thought, well, maybe there's some sense to that.
Right?
Maybe, because, you know, I hate bailing out these guys as much as, as the next guy. But then I heard a one-hour explanation of the banking, and actually this one was the mortgage crisis on This American Life just last week. And it was really, really good explanation of things. And they basically said, if you look at what we've done with the International Monetary Fund over the last 30 years, the strategy of a failing bank in a country is to lift it up and nationalize that bank for a short amount of time until it gets stable. And they had all kinds of reasons for this. But they said at the end of the day, that's what we do to other countries. Why wouldn't we do this to ourselves? You cannot, most economists would say, not most, you know, Rush Limbaugh Republicans would say this, but most economists would say, nationalize the banking system. You've got to have the, you cannot allow these guys to fail because the financial infrastructure will come crumbling down and it would be disaster. Now, that would absolutely refute what Ron Paul was saying. You know, Ron Paul is saying, let a few banks fail.
But 13 have already failed this year.
Right, right. And you know, a Citibank fails, and that's, I mean, I think they said the top 10 banks control 75% of the money. You know.
Do you really want all 10 of those to fail? Where will we get loans?
But I would maintain, if we nationalize this, now I'm not saying it's the right thing or not, but it seems to be the right thing. There's fear out there that we're going to permanently nationalize this. And there's nobody in this country from a leadership position to a lower position that wants that. Nobody.
Right.
It's nonsensical. It's fear-mongering. It's that Karl Rove game plan of fear-mongering. Excuse me. I have a scratchy throat today.
It's, yeah, I can understand why it would just be temporary. And
in fact, this article on what they were saying, in some cases, the nationalization would be as little as 2 hours. I mean, again, they were citing some information that I can't quite remember now, but there's probably more of an inclination to do that.
And there are countries that have socialized banks, and are they horrible? No, they're not horrible.
No, no, but we wouldn't, you know, we're not going to a socialist country, and we're not going to become that. I just think that's fear-mongering.
And what were the TARP funds? Weren't the TARP funds led by the Republicans and George Bush? Weren't the TARP funds supposed to prop up the banks?
But the problem is, it's not really working because
they didn't work.
See, and what these guys say, and they had experts and they had simple explanations of this, but they said, you know, you either let them go or you nationalize them. This medium stuff that we're doing
doesn't work.
Just doesn't work. Because of different profit scenarios. They talk about the capitalization of banks and so forth. You know, banks are failing because the lower mortgages, and they you know, you have defaulters and they can't take up those loans and can't price the house to market, or else they would all be bankrupt. So they call that mark to market. So they can't mark to market. So they're carrying these false books. That's the only reason why banks are alive right now, is because of false books. And we're trying to prop them up with a little bit of, I shouldn't say little, billions of dollars, but it's not solving the underlying problem, really. And again, I'm not probably being as eloquent as I should, but go listen to
it's
that. It's This American
it's a complicated
Life. It's
topic.
It's compelling and it's complicated. But there is probably reason to potentially nationalize some banks.
But one of the things that I just read about, too, that was ironic, is that 9 out of 10 banks still have the exact same executives at the top that led them into the problem in 2006.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if you have the exact same management that led you into this, do we really, really feel comfortable they're going to lead us out of it?
Right, right.
You know, at what point, when you have a failing private company, do you leave a corporation? Do you leave the person that led you to the brink of disaster, do you leave them in charge?
I don't get it.
Isn't that the first thing you do is you fire the management and
right.
bring in somebody fresh who has a whole different course.
Right.
And instead, they've been given lots and lots of money from the U.S. government and they haven't stepped down, but 100,000 jobs from bank employees have been lost in the last 2 years.
Right.
So, isn't that a shame?
Yeah, it's a shame.
I thought that was interesting. That may be one of the reasons.
It's all about our national greed. An ability to, we want to sell products to others that they don't need to make more money for ourselves.
And that aren't made by us either.
yeah,
that we have no manufacturing industry anymore.
Right, right.
And that's
right.
another problem.
There's good business. There's good, healthy business out there.
And there's
bad, deceitful, and maybe even immoral business.
Materialistic.
And I think we've been engaging in a lot of materialistic, immoral business. So let's get back down to good business practices and we can rebuild this country.
All right.
There's my
let's get off our soapboxes.
I know, really. Well, I've been doing my fair share. I've been spending a lot of money on this house.
You have.
So I've been bulking up the local economy. Hopefully that's been helping.
Are you planning any trips? I'm actually planning a small trip to D.C. to see the cherry blossoms bloom.
I've never seen that.
Did you know there's actually an official...
I've never seen it either.
There's an official blooming site and an official bloom calendar, and you can watch them bloom online.
Really?
It's really insane. But, I mean, it's a big deal because I think they were a gift from Japanese Americans.
Yes.
I'll have to learn all about them.
I think that's why we have cherry blossoms in D.C., because of a gift from the Japanese, right?
They were a gift from the Japanese, right?
Yeah.
And this year, FYI, their peak blooming season will be between April 3rd and April 12th.
Wow.
There you go.
Good to know.
Yes, and I like April 14th maybe, and April 12th is Easter, so I'm actually going to be in D.C. over Easter. So
oh,
I just
nice.
Thought that would be kind of fun, and who knew there was so much about cherry blossoms.
I'm going to go home to Illinois in mid-July sometime for my high school reunion and a little family reunion, too.
Wow.
And before that, I would like to get out to some wine country. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
All right. We'll see.
There you go.
But there's so many vacations on sale right now, which is,
really?
Again, if you were in the market for a car or if things are fairly stable and you're in the market for a vacation, I get emails all the time that, you know, vacation tours are 60% off like what they were just a year ago. You know?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, like Abercrombie and Kent,
those
are the ones I took to
high
Kenya.
End, yeah.
Oh, that was it was a nice one, and now 60% off to go to any of their destinations.
Really?
It's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. $2,000 you can go to some exotic location.
Wow.
It's just unbelievable. Everybody's hurting.
Well, for those that are staying at home and want to eat healthier, I have some tips.
Okay.
Actually, I got a couple tips, but a few pages of tips. But this one is interesting. I found this article in Men's Health, and it's basically about what foods sound healthy but aren't. And they say alternatives. I'll go through a few of them. Number one is bran muffin. They said instead eat ham, eggs, and cheese on an English muffin, and you're going to be much better off.
Really?
Yeah.
Ham, eggs, and cheese.
Bran muffins are comprised of two things your body doesn't want, sugar and refined flour.
Hmm.
So, again, counterintuitive, right? Chicken Caesar salad. dinner-sized portion is 900 calories. Instead, eat this grilled chicken on mixed greens, 400 calories and a lot less fat. Hmm. Tuna melt. Instead, have a roast beef or ham sandwich. Plain turkey out of a can is healthy, but tuna doused in mayo and melted cheese and slick with another layer of dressing is not. Hmm. Chicken wrap. Instead, have a grilled chicken sandwich. This is what's interesting. Turkey burger. Yeah. Sounds healthy.
Yes.
Everybody thinks turkey, ooh, it's got to be healthy.
Right.
They say instead have a good 7-ounce sirloin steak.
No.
Because people hear turkey and automatically think lean and healthy, but depending on the type of ground turkey and toppings used, these can be every bit as fatty and caloric as a beef burger. Now, sirloin, on the other hand, is actually one of the leanest cuts of beef you can have.
I'll be darned. That's really surprising. Did you know that?
No, I did
I
not know
you
that.
Were Mr. Turkey Burger.
No, I don't do that. Fruit smoothies. Instead of that, have 100% instead of fruit smoothies, have 100% fruit smoothie. Okay, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you got all the high, anything, I've learned this early on, anything with high fructose corn syrup is to be avoided like the plague. Treat that like a poison. Granola bar. Instead, have 1 ounce cheddar cheese with Triscuits.
Huh.
Lot less fat. Let's see if there's any other interesting ones in here. Dried fruit. Instead of having dried fruit, have fresh fruit.
Hmm.
Fish sandwich. Instead of a fish sandwich, I've heard this one before, have a chicken sandwich.
Because the fish is breaded?
Fish is healthy, but fish battered, fried, robed in cheese, and bathed in tartar sauce is decidedly not.
Oh. Okay, I guess you're right about that.
Yeah. So anyways, I thought those were kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
And I have some more eating tips I can talk about a little bit later. What do you got? Are you still focused on your...
No, but I did meet somebody today that... let me just mention this because I don't know how many of us have ever met somebody like this.
Oh, I met somebody like that.
Okay. I'm actually... our company's interviewing to fill a position, and it's kind of a blue-collar position, so
okay.
to speak. We need somebody to do assembly and write reports on... Oh. Need somebody to do assembly and write reports on incoming product.
Okay.
So we were looking for basically people with carpentry background.
Okay.
So today, meet a guy. Oh, and last time we ran an ad for this position, we had 5 responses. This time we had 90. Okay.
Wow.
Clearly.
Interesting.
It's a good thing if you're an employer right now because you can hire way over qualified people.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully give them a have a stepping stone to another job and you know.
Right.
And, yeah. So anyhow, that we had a guy come in today and he had custom woodworking experience and then
nice.
And then he says, but I have to tell you something. And the HR person and I look at him and he said, well, I have been in prison. And we said, okay. And I asked.
Good that he disclosed.
Right.
It would come up in a check, I guess.
Oh, right. It'll come up in a background check. And I asked, well, may I ask what for? And he said, aggravated assault and robbery. And I went,
wow.
Okay. And then we talk some more, and then we get back to this.
How is he generally presenting himself at this point, from a looks, from a dialogue standpoint?
He was very well spoken, and he was he knew a lot about woodworking, and he could do the job.
Okay.
And compared to the other additional 2 people we spoke to today, he was by far my favorite.
Wow.
But we still have many, many more to.
Sure.
You know, clearly we have the pick of the litter right now.
Right.
But this is the part that is interesting. He tells us flat out that he's 36 and he does not look 36. And he said this happened a long, long time ago when he was 18. And it turns out he served 13 years and his term was 40 years.
Oh, wow.
40 years for this crime. So.
Wow.
So the dilemma is, and then so we.
And you can almost, it's easier to forgive some dopey thing some guy did at the age of 18.
Correct.
But then you wonder what influences he had in prison and so forth. And
right, but he did learn a skill. I mean, he spent time in prison to learn a very detailed skill.
Yeah.
And, but the part that I was getting at was he checks in with his parole officer once a month, and the parole officer would, you know, if we would hire him, would come to the office. And it's just, you know, maybe he's turned his life around. He's been employed. He had a steady record. He was honest about it.
Yeah.
But this poor guy in this economy is at such a disadvantage. Who on earth is going to hire him?
Right, right.
You know, and who's ever actually met somebody who's been in this position? I mean, I don't typically hang out with these kinds of folks. You know, yeah. Like, hey, I got a secret.
You're a little bit tossed as a company leader. On one hand, you want to say, hey, I want to give this guy a break. He's really qualified.
Yeah,
And he probably deserves a break. Or not deserves a break. I should say it differently. He could probably use a break.
Right.
On the other hand, you have your company to protect. And,
correct.
And
robbery. So yeah. Do I need to be concerned about property or records or anything? But more importantly, wouldn't all my coworkers freak out as soon as they heard that there is this convicted felon working among them?
Yeah.
So it was quite the dilemma that I felt really bad for him on one hand, because I think maybe he was rehabilitated. And isn't this what prison is all about? You know, 13 years of time, this man lost basically his entire 20s.
Yep.
And now he's out. He seemed to be straight. Now, granted, I only talked to him for half an hour, but I just felt like what a dilemma that any potential employer would be in. And how do people in this environment, you know, we're looking at somebody with an architecture degree and somebody with journeyman carpenter's experience and master craftsman for 30 years. I mean,
wow.
That's our pick of
that's
the litter
the
right now.
Yeah.
And yet there's this felon. And I just think that it's kind of hard, you know. So on one hand, I'd like to say that, yes, with our overcrowded prisons and what 1 in 7 people in the United States are in prison.
Right.
I mean, some huge number of people are in prison right now. That
not a bad place to be right now.
You get 3 meals a day, right? Oh, shoot. So that was just
them exaggerating.
That was just
obviously
the person I met today. So I just
interesting.
That, how often do you come across somebody like that?
No, you don't come across somebody like that very often at all.
No, you don't.
And it's an interesting dilemma.
It is a dilemma. So,
wow.
What else would you like to talk about?
Well, I have. For those my Facebook readers may know, I've mentioned this before, but I think this is a nice story.
Okay.
In the midst of a lot of bad things,
mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those neat city stories that come along. I can't remember who the famous Chicago writer that would find these little unique things about Chicago and write about them. And this is one of those things. Parkland Hospital is known for this cake that they make.
They call it
Thursday cake. They make it every Thursday. And it's an Italian cream cake. They've made it there with different cooks over 25 years now. And it's, for the most part, been just a local thing in Parkland Hospital. Everybody looks forward to it. It's made out of pecans, coconut eggs, and lots of sugar. And there's cream cheese in the icing on the cake. And I actually, our friend Susan does volunteer work at Parkland every Thursdays. And I keep telling her, get me some freaking Thursday cake, you know? And also, Susan and I know doctor at Parkland.
Uh-huh.
And she's had the cake, and she's like, she loves it. So, but it's really interesting. This cake is just, it's blossomed, and they're not selling it to the outside world, but people call them up to buy it, and they do sell it to them.
Oh, wow.
And it's just become this local kind of cool
thing.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Parkland, by the way, is our municipal hospital. It's the big crazy. Everybody goes who doesn't have insurance, you know.
It's supposedly, I heard today, it has more births. It's the busiest birthing center in the United States.
I think I've heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news is, I don't know if you saw this, but the city of Dallas actually voted, or the city council, can't remember, to basically approve of a sort of a new Parkland.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's kind of a big deal, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Parkland is actually, and they have, from what I've understood, the best burn unit in the United States.
Yeah.
Pretty
and
freaking
that is,
good.
And that is when Kennedy was shot. That is where they took him.
Yeah.
It's trauma. Right. It's best trauma care, too.
Yeah, and it's that old, so it just probably does need an update. So anyway, I thought that's kind of a nice little, you know,
that is
story, and we need to get some Thursday cake. That's what they call it there, Thursday cake.
Mom, isn't it? I don't give a flying fuck about.
Well, another Dallas story that made the national news. And this was a while ago because we haven't done a podcast for a while. But
I know. We have these thick slices of...
We've been very bad. But did you hear about the Dallas Academy Bulldogs that lost 100-0?
My next article. I just find this so funny.
It's more athletic dilemma.
It is.
That's really what everybody's talking about. But a private girls' school lost 100-0.
Right.
And they made the national news. They got attention.
They didn't make the national news because they lost 100-0, but they made the national news. Why?
Because they continued to play, right?
Not exactly. I mean, yes.
They didn't give up.
They made the national news, though, because the coach was fired. That's why they made the national news.
The coach of the opposing team that encouraged his team,
he didn't stop it.
To go to 100 points, did not stop it. And so the debate is...
Well, the president of the school, that one, said, this is shameful. They were like a private Christian university. They said, it's not what Jesus would do. It's not Christ-like, and we regret it, and we're sorry. And then the coach said in a blog/email, he basically said, I don't agree with that. He said, we did everything ethically. I didn't ask the girls. We don't believe in running up scores. The girls played
as hard as they could
for as long as they could,
right,
with absolute, you know, athleticism and virtue and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because he spoke out, he was fired.
Right.
So it is a dilemma. But what's interesting, when you do a little more research on this article, you find out that there's this classification of, it mostly happens in girls basketball, sadly, but 100-0 is a little bit uncommon, but same year, just in Dallas, there's scores like 59-2 and 60-7. And then they profiled one other coach who sort of said, you know, mm-hmm, we knew within 4 minutes.
Right, that they were, it was going to be a blowout.
That this is done.
Right.
And he advised his girls, you know, just, you know, go slow. He took out the first string. So maybe that's what he should have done. But you sort of wonder if you're in a competition where you know in 4 minutes and you got 60 to go or 56 to go, you wonder if they should have call it done.
The mercy rule. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Should they implement a 45-point mercy rule that when one team gets a 45-point lead, they stop?
Right.
You know, that's something they're debating.
And you know, I wonder what the girls on the losing side of the 100-0... Did they still enjoy them? I mean, I don't want to say enjoy themselves, but would they have liked to have called that early? Would they would have wanted to play?
Right.
I don't know the answer to that.
They did talk to one woman who was on a 103-0 loss, and she said that after a while it was embarrassing to be out
there.
She thought people were laughing at that.
Okay.
Now, this wasn't this 100-0 score.
I understand,
score,
but maybe a similar feeling.
But we were feeling similarly, but... So the sports psychologist said that sports involves three things: cooperative spirit, healthy competition, and sportsmanship.
Mm.
And these are high school children.
Yes.
And really, what's right and what's wrong? You know, did they do something wrong? Did they do something right? I'm kind of thinking they sort of rub their nose in it, you know, to go to 100 and stop. And, you know, it's... I played high school basketball.
Yeah,
you know, and I think I probably would have been humiliated if
at the
I had
same
to stand
time,
out there.
At the same time, I guess the devil's advocate would be, okay, so you're doing well against this team. You're going to win, but you have a couple matches coming up that are going to be really tough. And
does this help you get better?
Does it help you sharpen your skills?
Right, because
and
when you play
are you doing the girls? Are you doing your team a disservice by slowing down and doing the things that you wouldn't normally do to teach them good basketball techniques?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know,
mm-hmm,
and is that a disservice to the team?
Right.
It's not your fault that they didn't that the other you're unmatched. In some ways, it's the scheduler's fault.
Well, the other thing that's pointed out, this coach who was fired, somebody else has commented that coaches must understand that winning games by lopsided margins doesn't mean they're great coaches or that they have meaningful influence on their players.
Of course not. Yeah.
We need to teach coaches to act in the best interests of their players rather than their own egos.
Right.
So, you know, it's the coach's job to think, because the kids don't feel how the opponent feels, but that is the coach's job to do that.
Yeah.
So what was the coach thinking as these girls were losing, you know, not one point, you know? So,
you know, it's interesting though. You almost think like at halftime, the two coaches would kind of get together and say, hey, you know, what do you want to do about this second half?
Right. Do you want to put your entire second string in? Right?
Yeah. And let them why don't we do a second string versus second string? Or no, second string versus first string for a while.
Right.
Do you want to do that? We don't want to humiliate you. Yeah, we don't want to patronize you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How, you know, what's the best?
Right.
That might be a reasonable approach, but never
well,
done, probably.
It'll be interesting to see if this the next time this comes up is what the coaches do. You know, because clearly
there are
some ramifications here.
National,
right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, that happened in our dear backyard here in Dallas.
Oh, yes, definitely. Makes me want to go see some girls' basketball games. Actually, what is kind of funny is the local news station, AM news station, The Ticket, which I listen to every morning. They want to put their guys, you know, middle-aged guys to do the radio against
these girls?
Against any girl team. And they had one small private school in Garland all lined up, and finally their athletic director said, no, we don't want to do this. That were not the losing end of the 100-0 team, but uh-huh. Probably respectable.
Uh-huh.
But now they have Lake Highlands. You've probably heard of Lake Highlands High School.
Uh-huh.
Lake Highlands girls are going to play them. and you know, they've taken calls, they've taken conjectures, and the Lake Highlands team is... on the bubble of getting to the playoffs. So they're a good, respectable team, not great. But then some guys on the ticket that are going to be on the team says, well, they're going to blow us out. And some guys on the ticket goes, come on, they're high school girls. We should be able to beat them. And it's interesting. I wonder who will win. Because these are, you know, middle-aged, non-athletes.
How often do these guys play together?
Never.
Oh.
Never.
Okay, well then the girls should have an advantage because they have teamwork, right?
One would think, but as the men, as these guys say, you know, the thing is that
the only advantage is height in basketball.
We have height and we have strength.
And speed probably, yeah.
And potentially speed.
But if the girls can outshoot them.
Yeah, and out-team them.
But out-team
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, as one of the guys, it's interesting to hear the dialogue, because one of the guys is like, I don't want to do this, you know?
Because he probably can't run back and forth.
Well, and you know, it's like we don't have a strategy. We don't, you know, they have plays.
They won't even know who's on what position.
Right.
You're the forward. No, you're the point guard.
Right.
No, you're the center.
You know, they're setting up for strategy for charity and all that.
When's this going
to
be?
I can't remember the date. I think it's in a month or so. So it'll be interesting to see the result. Yes. But they're doing it for good cause and everything. And, you know.
Oh, because of this 100-0
I think
blowout?
That's what sparked the whole thing. It's
that's cute.
I think they had a conversation early on. It's like, you know, how bad are these? Why are there so many mismatches?
Right.
And so I think they ruled out against taking, you know, a horrible, horrible women's team. But,
right.
You know.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I thought no athletic director would accept that. It's like, you know, we're not going to, you know, we're a high school. You know, we're not going
to
do this. No benefit to it, but I think they think they're going to get some positive PR from it and have a good time, and it's all for charity. And
I see images of Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs.
I know. But it's not really, in this case, again, men versus women, mm-hmm. which I think makes it a little bit easier. It's real. I mean, it is against men, but it is men versus women, but it's really about middle-aged, non-athletes, non-strategy guys versus, you know, a coached athletes.
Yeah, coach
high school
athletes.
At the high school
yeah,
level.
High school
I'll do
level,
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it should be interesting. Keep us posted, Jeff.
I know. I'm kind of interested to see how that goes. So I have, you know, I'm looking through my articles, and I just have so many articles. Okay, like job cuts exceed 100,000 for the week. I don't know what week this is.
It doesn't
matter.
It's every week.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that was the last week of January.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
One week it was 100,000.
Yep. Okay.
It was nasty. Yeah.
Well, I do have a bit of local news. Did you see the scuttlebutt about the George Bush Library? This is becoming real now, folks. You know, George Bush.
They are here. George and Laura are here in the Dallas area. There have been sightings
yes.
all over the city.
Yeah, and he actually went to SMU and just went on campus. I kind of admire the guy for this. Just went on campus, took questions from the SMU students.
He did that in the elementary school, too. It's probably the same questions.
Probably the same questions. But, you know, college kids, albeit it's a little bit of a conservative college, but college kids... He's not the most popular guy, and he'd probably have some tough questions. But apparently the kids were, you know, kind of awestruck and were nice to him and all that kind of stuff. So he's making the rounds a little bit.
He's going to build his library here, for those of you who are not really from here.
That's been a big deal. It's going to be right off of SMU campus. There's a big tract of land. And here lies the problem. And I think this is kind of interesting city dilemma. The local residents are miffed because what are they doing? They're going to build a big parking lot or something. It's going to destroy their views and things like that. What they're saying, the citizens said, we don't mind this library being here, but it's going to be huge amounts of tourists, you know, eventually, maybe not right away, you know, but there's going to be a lot of traffic, a lot of buses, a lot of smoke from the buses. We got children. So they said there are ways, we've actually worked with people, there are ways to design the facility and the parking around this that meets the neighbors. Mm-hmm. And they're not getting any kind of satisfaction. Hmm. And I think that's bad. I mean, yeah, it probably would cost a little bit more money to design the library in a neighborhood-friendly way. Hmm. But it can be done. And isn't that important?
There was a lot of controversy about even bringing that library here. Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
There were a lot of SMU professors didn't want it.
Right.
But Laura went here, right?
Right.
Laura went to SMU.
Laura went to SMU, yeah.
Yeah.
And they lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for a while, mm-hmm. I think before he was governor.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're like, what, splitting their time between here and Crawford?
Yeah. I thought they were spending more time here because she doesn't like Crawford.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
That's what I thought.
Well, I don't blame her. What's there to do down there?
He wants to hang out on a ranch.
He just goes there and chops wood. I mean, exactly. I don't see the appeal to that at all. But
but what a lot of Dallasites don't like is that the additional police staff required to escort the Secret Service around is $1 million to Dallas taxpayers. And that's what a lot of people...
To Dallas taxpayers?
Oh, yeah. We're paying
for
the police.
Because of our police.
Yeah, there's at least one or two police cars with every... with all the... Every time he leaves with a motorcade of SUVs... I think he has like 8 SUVs in the motorcade. There's 2 Dallas police cars in front.
So what about when he's in Crawford? Does he have 2 Crawford policemen
probably,
down there too? So that's
Crawford,
probably their whole
Texas,
force.
Probably, that's right. They're all protecting him. Yeah, but here, and then there's also Dallas police at the gate of Dario Place. In addition to the Secret Service. So
have you been by there?
I haven't, but they're putting up a gate. You know, they're changing the face of the neighborhood, so.
Yeah.
But
I saw that in the city council vote, mm-hmm. and it went, I think, mm-hmm. 9-0 or
but
something.
We Dallasites are paying for the local police, and the Secret Service of Protection is only 10 years now. Did you know that? I thought it was lifetime, but it's only 10 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I guess he's not that valuable after 10 years.
Wow. Wow. Interesting.
So speaking about Dallas, so do you know what cities most people want to live in here in the United States?
Dallas?
Well,
I don't know. What
cities exactly.
People want to live in?
Yeah, where would you want to live? The most desirable cities in the United States.
There's what cities do I want to live in that's affordable and that's, you know, has good housing and good jobs and things versus what's my utopia? Those are 2 different questions. Dallas wouldn't be my utopia, but I think Dallas has got a really great and strong blend between business and cost of living and urban things to do. But if I could live anywhere, it wouldn't
most
be Dallas.
Most popular big city by a Pew Research Center study. Most people want to live in Denver.
Yeah, I can see the appeal, although it sounds great on paper. You know, close to skiing, close to the mountains, fresh air, you know, all this great stuff. But I heard it's very crowded there and, you know, and all that.
All right, well then, second choice, San Diego.
Yeah.
All right, perfect weather, 350 days a year.
Right.
Followed by Seattle, Orlando, Tampa, San Francisco. And Dallas finishes with 24% of the respondents. We finished smack dab in the middle of the pack. And so Dallas was a little bummed by this survey.
I'm impressed, actually. I mean, that's not bad, because Dallas is a great place to live.
We were tied with Philadelphia. Jeff, we tied with New York and Philadelphia.
Dallas is a great place to live, but there's nobody that doesn't live here would really think of any reason to come here. You know what I mean?
Right.
We like it because, again, there's huge amounts of stuff to do. It's got a growing arts district, and you know all the urban stuff is really growing here.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had jobs. Now, this economy is obviously stalling everything. And affordable housing.
Right.
It's always been that way for a long time. Great blend.
Centrally located, too.
Centrally located.
You can get anywhere pretty quickly. But
Huh.
This survey said that the more popular Texas city was San Antonio with 29% of the respondents, and Houston was 23%.
Over Dallas?
No, Dallas was 24%, Houston
okay.
was 23%.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And then the least popular city was Detroit, followed by Cleveland.
Detroit's really having its problems nowadays, isn't it?
Did you hear the average home price in Detroit's $18,000?
Yes.
Wasn't that awful? Who would think? $18,000.
Yeah, I know. And I think
half the city is left.
That's what I've heard. It's like, well, there's all kinds of like houses and neighborhoods that are just like getting rat infested.
Right. Because nobody cares.
How can a city just fail?
A city just disappear. Just dry up and move.
Yeah.
Well, the auto industry.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything associated with one industry. When that industry fails, the city will fail.
Yeah.
You know, when you're dependent on basically one industry. So.
Boy.
I'm sorry. I wish I had better news.
Sorry, Detroit.
Sorry.
Well, back to my food.
So, okay, back to food.
So this is on cholesterol.
Okay.
What they're saying is, you know, in fact, I went to a doctor recently, and I just had slightly above, you know, above level. I got to check my exact numbers out, but slightly above the line.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to be cautious, but for cholesterol.
Okay.
And my doctor immediately said, oh, why don't we get you on some of these statins? I said, we doctors take them like aspirin every day. It's a good, healthy way. It gets your cholesterol down just like that. Well, this article is kind of saying, beware, you know, and of course I knew this in the back of my head anyways. I just don't like taking pills. Okay.
Right. Especially one that's daily.
Yeah. No kidding. Right. Mm-hmm. Are you like, you know, confined to doing that the rest of your life?
Right. And this, by the way, would make it harder to get life insurance later on if you tried to get life insurance.
Yeah.
Private life
I've
insurance.
Heard that, right.
This makes it much more
I've heard
difficult.
That. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, so that what they said is there's been some things in the news about some of these statins giving you different muscular reactions from a long-term perspective. So, they said there's lots of things you can do to control this on your own.
You can eat oatmeal in Special K.
Here you go. Beans, lentils, legumes, fish oils and fish, oatmeal, dried nuts and fruit. It's all that kind of stuff. And I've got, more specifically, I've got some foods that lower LDL specifically. Red grapefruit. It's huge. Red grapefruit. Steel cut oatmeal, pecans, pistachios, Promise Active Spread. I guess that's a form of fake butter. Macadamia nuts, pinto beans, walnuts, almonds, peanuts, really almost all beans and peanuts
nuts.
And stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Raises, okay, so if that's your problem, you need to lower HDL.
LDL,
that's that. Mm-hmm. If you need to raise your HDL.
HDL is the bad one. HDL was the bad one.
No? Well, this says raise HDL, so okay. It must be the good one. Orange juice, hazelnuts, dark chocolate, and extra virgin olive oil. And if you need to lower your triglycerides, and I can't remember, I had one of these was my problem. I can't remember which one it was offhand. I'll have to look. Lowers triglycerides is fish oil, peanuts, and pistachios.
Like they want you to eat peanuts.
The lesson here, I think, is beans, nuts, and fish.
Yep. There you go.
So anyways, simple little tip, just put this stuff into your diet, you know?
And don't take the pill every day if you don't really have to.
Yeah, you know, be careful with that. I mean, it can be a lifesaver. You know, I'm not a doctor.
Right.
And if you've got, you know, danger sign cholesterol, you better take the statin.
Right.
Because it really does work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, try to get it out naturally. I mean, I'm going to start eating lentils again every day. I used to do that. I am going to do that. Just make a bunch and bring it to work. And I've always eaten a lot of whole foods and stuff, but I'll up my...
I thought you ate oatmeal all the time, too.
Oatmeal, I do. I have oatmeal and 5-grain cereal and muesli and things like that. Try to get us whole foods.
That it would be high. Hmm?
Yeah, but I still have my fair share of sausage and
oh, there you go.
Foods, too.
All right. You know, now he confesses.
Exactly.
Oh,
Gretchen has got a big finish coming up, it sounds like.
No. I'm trying to find something that's not.
Are you going to finish us up with happiness or sadness?
I'm trying to find something. Well...
She has this huge, thick pile of stuff from the last month and a half that we haven't done a show, and she can't find a single happy note. You can tell what kind of news she's drawn to.
I know. It's bad. Oh. Okay, well, here's just... This is a fun clip about... Does anybody know what a trillion is? Because I'm really not great with numbers, but...
It's a thousand millions, I believe.
Is it?
I think so. I could be wrong.
I think
of it as a million with three more zeros, so that'd be 1,000 million.
A million? With three more zeros. No, it's a million with six more zeros.
No kidding.
Yeah, because a billion. Remember, so there's a billion.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
So it is right. 1 and 12 zeros.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
You can visualize that in your mind. And 12 zeros.
And so it's 1,000 billions, which is 1,000 millions, which is
correct. It's a million millions. It's 1,000 billions. See right here? There's the little, each of those is a billion.
Okay.
Okay, all right. So I'm showing Jeff a graphic here. Okay, but here's... Well,
that's an awful lot.
no shit. Oh, my God. $1 trillion is equal to 1,000 new Cowboy stadiums. If anybody knows, we've got this brand new, most expensive stadium coming in the world. It's opening, what, in June? It's coming really quick, right?
Yeah, in time for the next season.
Mm-hmm. 1 trillion people is 61,000 Texases.
61,000 Texases?
I'm sorry, 41,000 Texases.
Oh,
so take the whole state of Texas times 41, that's 1 trillion. Okay, every high school student in the United States could get a free college education with $1 trillion.
Wow.
$1 trillion could buy 16 million Habitat for Humanity houses to house 43 million Americans. We could end poverty with $1 trillion.
Wow.
You know, way more than just that, right? And 1 trillion barrels of oil would last for 33 years.
Wow.
I mean, it's just, I don't
know. That is staggering, actually.
I had
actually.
Such a hard time trying to understand what 1 trillion was, you know? So... I just thought
and
that
we have already put 1 trillion, if not more, into all of our bailout stuff combined, right?
Right.
That's staggering.
$1 trillion would be enough money to buy 1,000 boxes of Girl Scout cookies for everybody in the United States.
Now that's...
there you go. That's
there's relevant. A bailout.
Think about 1,000 boxes of of your favorite Girl Scout cookie. Oh.
But you know how many this and that podcast episodes it pays for?
I don't know.
Infinite, many. Because they're free, and they'll always be free to you.
Oh. Well, I think we shared enough of our trauma on this show, right?
I know. Hopefully,
things will be good on the next show.
Hopefully, things with us will be better, and things with the country will be better. And we'll, you know, now that we got the studio back up and going, we'll have more frequent shows. So, say goodnight, Gretchen.
Good night, Jeff.
Good night,
audience.
Good night, audience. Ciao, bye.